On this episode of China Unscripted, the coronavirus in China. It's much worse than what state media are telling people. And people who've been trying to get information out are being censored, or worse. Welcome to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganesda.
You know, this episode of China Unscripted is sponsored by Surfshark. Surfshark is a VPN that can protect your privacy while you're using your computer, Android, or iPhone.
And actually, a lot of people use VPNs inside China because it allows them to jump over the Chinese Communist Party's great firewall so they can access, you know, the real internet.
Mm-hmm. Well, for a limited time, anyone listening can get 83% off a two-year plan and an additional month free if they go to surfshark.deals/unscripted. So, get yourself a nice, safe VPN and support the show. Also, today we're drinking some more tea from our tea sponsors, Path of Cha. If you'd like to join us drinking some good tea, you can support the show by going to go.pathofcha.com/unscripted. And with that, the topic for today is once again the coronavirus. And, you know, really more and more is coming out about just how badly this is going for the Chinese Communist Party.
And also for the people in China who are suffering because of the Communist Party and how they reacted to this.
Well, yes, that goes without saying. But, you know, this has really become an opportunity, I think, for the rest of the world to sort of see the Chinese Communist Party for what it really is. I mean, the fact that there was a horrible cover-up is just common knowledge now.
Well, I mean, also, we can't guarantee that there isn't still some sort of cover-up or fudging of the numbers happening.
Yeah, there most likely is a continuing cover-up.
Well,
I would say that, like, irrespective of whether there's an actual cover-up, there's a mishandling of data, which is that a large number of people who are sick or who have already passed away are not being tested or were never tested for the coronavirus. Partly this is a lack of test kits. It may also be people don't want to collect the statistics, but it definitely means there's a big undercount of the number of people who've been infected.
I mean, there was an article done by Caixing magazine, which is an independent, quote-unquote, Chinese media, you know, as independent as you can get in China, which means they're still subject to censorship.
But they do sometimes try to push the
They've been excellent. They've been excellent on the coronavirus reporting. So they had interviewed recently a doctor at a hospital in Wuhan who talked about how there's just a limited amount of test kits, plus the fact that there was, in the very beginning, especially, the requirements for diagnosing a patient as having the coronavirus were super stringent, mm-hmm. in a way that made it obvious to everybody who was actually working on the ground that many people were not being diagnosed with the coronavirus who actually had the coronavirus. Mm. So he said that's been kind of loosened now, like the criteria for officially counting somebody. But, you know, we don't know how many people already passed through that. Plus, he was very distressed about the fact that, like, when they run out of beds in the hospital, they just can't test people because mm-hmm. they can't admit them once if they get a positive test. So they're only testing people that they can admit. So once you run out of space, like, that's, like, the testing kits, the bed space, all of that is probably artificially lowering the numbers of, like, you know, actual cases.
So even now, we don't really have a good sense of the full scope of the outbreak inside of China.
Yes. And right. There's also, I mean, the latest numbers as of Sunday when we were recording this podcast says the number of infections, according to official government data, is over 37,000.
Oh my gosh, that's definitely way below what
yes.
it really is.
I mean, I remember like a week ago there was a nurse in Wuhan was saying like there's 90,000. Which isn't unconfirmed, but, I mean, 30,000 doesn't seem.
37.
I read an article that Wuhan had about 100,000 hospital beds between 24 hospital facilities.
Total and, hospital beds or yeah. hospital beds that could take these patients?
It didn't specify.
Okay.
But let's be conservative and assume that that's the number of total hospital beds.
Oh, that's too low for actually, never mind. That must be the, because that's too low for a city of 11 million people.
But is it in China?
Okay, fair point.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know, but what the report said is that they were all full and they were turning people away, which is to say that this is as of like the end of January. And so that suggests that there's just a much greater number, like it's probably easily in the hundreds of thousands of infections by now.
Just in Wuhan, are you talking about?
Yeah, just in Wuhan.
Yeah, I mean, the official number also, like the big news today is that the death toll, the official death toll on the coronavirus has risen to 811.
Well, that's more than SARS.
Yes, which is surpassing the death toll from SARS, which was 774.
But that's also the official death toll from SARS, so we don't know for sure.
Yeah, pretty much guaranteed to not be accurate.
Yeah, and the official death toll, like the number of coronavirus infections, official infections had surpassed the number of SARS cases last week at some point.
Uh-huh.
But again, the SARS data is probably an undercount as well.
Yeah, but the fact that they're even admitting that it's worse than SARS gives you an idea that this is probably a pretty serious situation.
And, that Taixing interview with the Wuhan doctor, we can post a link to it because it was reprinted by the Straits Times in Singapore. But that particular doctor, in his hospital, they immediately had, when this first broke out, like set up isolation wards inside mm-hmm. their ICU for their, patients. So he said, in our hospital, we've only had 40 medical staff infected, which is low.
Mm-hmm.
He said some hospitals have had like 2/3 of their medical staff infected. Jeez. Because like he had kind of like this person who had like, you know, was worried about the SARS thing. So they had already like implemented SARS level kind of like isolation wards and that kind of stuff. And he was talking about how they're so running so low on the, the full body hazmat suits and stuff that once like they put them on for like an 8 or 12 hour shift, they cannot take them off. So they can't eat, drink, or go to the bathroom for 8 to 12 hours. Because once you do any of that, that breaks the seal and they just don't have enough supplies for multiple sets per person anymore.
Jeez.
So, you know, in the beginning, he said they set aside like 16 beds or something in their ICU for an isolation ward. And he was like, within a week, we were full.
Wow, that's crazy.
So, like, that's one of those anecdotal stories that does make you think that this is, you know, definitely worse than the government reported numbers.
What I've been surprised about is how widely believed the sort of conspiracy theory is that this virus was something that it was like a biological weapon that leaked from a bioresearch lab.
I mean,
in China, in Wuhan.
Again, we just won't know for...
We'll probably never know.
We'll probably never know. And it's not unlikely that it could have leaked from a lab. But
is it a weapon? Who knows?
You know, again, is the Chinese Communist Party doing bioweapons research?
100%.
Yes, definitely. And genetic research. And, you know, but there's also different type of thing research that you could be doing on viruses that doesn't involve weaponizing them, such as developing vaccines and things like that. So we just and I think people have taken data like somebody in one of our episodes last week had said, well, you know, now they've proven that the first patient had nothing to do with the wet market. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously not the origin. And we actually don't know if that is the first patient.
But I think the significance is whether or not it is actually a biological weapon that leaked, the fact that people are just kind of casually saying, oh, yeah, I'm sure it was a bioweapon that leaked, is a totally different thing than a couple of years ago, people being like, oh, yeah, China's a, you know, up and coming superpower. It's they're a good country.
Look at their high-speed trains. Yeah. They're so advanced.
I think, you know, you still have people defending them.
Oh, for
yeah.
sure.
And you still have people saying that, oh, that's not a big deal. You know, the bioweapon thing also is kind of hard to, you know, because it just sounds a little crazy.
But I've heard it so many places.
But like,
It's like a PR battle the Chinese Communist Party has lost, and that's because it's kind of their own making.
I mean, in communist China, like, that's where conspiracies can come true, right? Like, the conspiracy that they're locking up a million Muslims in concentration camps. No, that's not possible, and yet it is. What?
I mean, their re-education, you know, like, whatever training centers.
I see where you're going with this.
Yeah. Like the, they're not forcibly harvesting the organs of political prisoners. They're just, you know, taking the hearts out, dusting them off a little bit, making sure they work good.
They're recycling.
They're recycling.
That's really dark.
Wow. So bad. And it came to you so quick. I think you should get a job in the Global Times.
I was reading 1984 this morning. What can I say?
Oh, did you know David Bowie? Why am I talking about this? David Bowie did a whole concept album based on 1984. He had to call it Diamond Dogs, though, because he couldn't get permission in the end.
To actually use
1984, though there is a song called 1984 on the album.
Did he release it in 1984?
No, this was probably still in the 70s or possibly early 80s.
Okay,
I'm not sure.
You know, I haven't read 1984 before.
I just
started this morning. Yeah,
that's a nice thing to do early in the morning.
I have a particular reason for reading it, but it was just funny because that was not my, like, you know how everybody in high school reads like some dystopian novel like Fahrenheit 451 or Brave New World, like
Little House on the Prairie.
You know, apparently there was a lot going on under the surface there that wasn't,
you know. All right, let's not get on there. I want to hear about 1984.
No, I was just saying that, like, in my high school we read Animal Farm,
which I did not,
and we read Brave New World and Fahrenheit 451. Mm-hmm. Although I had read Fahrenheit 451 when I was 9, and that was way too young to understand.
That explains so much about you, Shelley.
Well, I had won it at like a book fair or something like that, and it wasn't apparent that, like, you know, this should not be a book that a 9-year-old was reading. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I can blame my elementary school.
Well, so what's your take from 1984?
Oh, no. Well, I just started it. So, you know, I like all the cute little nicknames for the ministries, though. Like Mini Love.
Yeah. Gosh, it's really... Well, I mean, why do I want to say John Steinbeck? That's not who wrote
George Orwell.
George Orwell. It's early in the morning. I mean, he was a communist. He was involved in it. He saw from the inside where all that was going, and it really shows how much he knew.
Yeah, it's funny, because he actually fought on behalf of, like, he volunteered to fight on behalf of the communists during the Spanish Civil War, and this is, like, the 1930s.
There were, like, two or three different groups of communists.
Because you had the diehard communists, and you had the Stalinist communists, and they fought each other, because the Stalinists, like, wanted the weapons from the Soviet Union, but the other communists were like, oh, like, you're impure because you're not true communists. And they fought each other, and they eventually turned on George Orwell.
That's not real communism.
I think he joined the non-Stalinist communists,
right,
but then got purged by the Nazis.
He like barely escaped with his life. Long story, but at any rate, yeah, it kind of turned him against, it kind of made him not like communism. I think his actual experience working with these people.
Which I sort of feel is what's happening with a lot of people in China right now dealing with the coronavirus.
Yes.
I mean, it is...
Oh, actually, I wonder if this someday, after the Chinese Communist Party falls, like, what kind of novels and books Chinese people will write when they finally have freedom of speech.
Oh, there are already some interesting ones. So I recently read one called China Dream. It's been translated into English by a Chinese, like, dissident writer who's in exile in London. Mm-hmm. His name is Ma Jian, and it is kind of like, weird, like, it's about, you know, the, like, this low-level government official, like, party official, and he's corrupt. He's got, like, 5 mistresses, and he's, you know, trying to kind of save his own skin, basically. But he's kind of starting to go crazy and remembering, like, he keeps having flashbacks to the Cultural Revolution.
Wow.
While he's trying to, like, implement this new device that will, you know, somehow turn everybody's dreams into the China dream.
Oh, wow.
So there's this, like, magical realism stuff going on. And
which,
like,
has actually been in Chinese literature for a long time.
And it's interesting because there's that aspect, and then there's, like, the Cultural Revolution scenes are very traumatic. And it was a good read and pretty... It's not a long novel, so if people are kind of interested in seeing what Chinese people, how they kind of satirize the corruption inside the party and stuff like that, that's a good one.
And even within the system, like, you have Chinese science fiction authors like Liu Cixin, his three-body problem. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he basically justifies, like, in an interview, he was basically trying to justify the Xinjiang labor camps. So he's definitely, like, a part of the system. But even within this three-body problem, it is a critical look at both the Cultural Revolution and sort of socialism in general.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a critical look at the Cultural Revolution. Mm-hmm. That's clear from the first book. But as you get later into it, it does kind of seem like it's more positive towards this, like, idealized socialism.
I don't know, because, like, the theme is, like, this sort of... Like, people have this mentality of, like, it's better if... all of humanity is wiped out, then some people escape.
Oh, like, that's a negative thing.
Right, but that's a criticism of, like, Chinese people's mentality, I think. That's how he's framing it.
Like, the collectivist thing?
Yeah.
Well...
I don't know. I mean, I guess there's more than one way to interpret the book, and I don't want to give away spoilers, because Three Body Problem is a good trilogy.
I think it's funny, because now this podcast has turned into a mini... China Uncensored Book Club discussion.
It's not an entirely bad idea to start up.
I think maybe...
We could get all the viewers involved, too.
Oh, like, you know how Oprah has book club suggestions?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she does.
I mean, especially when she had her TV show still, it was like, oh, you know, Oprah's book club could sell millions of copies of whatever book she picked.
Well, the China Unscripted podcast book club will result in tens of books being sold.
Oh, my gosh. And they would all be really depressing books. Yeah.
Speaking of depressing, coronavirus. Obviously, the big news that happened this week was the death of Dr. Li Wenliang. And he was one of the first doctors who sort of tried to raise the alarm about the coronavirus.
I don't even know if you could call him... Like,
yeah, it didn't seem like that's what he was trying to do. He was just trying to, in a private WeChat group?
Yes, a private WeChat group.
Talk to fellow colleagues about this virus coming out and, like, being like, hey, there's, like, this sort of SARS-like thing going, coming around. Let's all pay attention to it. And then that got leaked.
Right. So, like, when you see a lot of these, you know, headlines or whatever that call him a whistleblower, like, that is... what he did. He wasn't like a whistleblower in terms of the way we'd think of him in the West, where, like, he went to the media or, you know, he tried to report
he went
it
to People's Daily.
Right. Or, you know, or, I mean, he could have gone to Caixing or whatever, right? Yeah. But, like, you know, he didn't go to the media or any of that stuff. He literally just tried to warn, like, some friends of his from medical school to, like, watch out because he was seeing these things in his hospital and maybe it was a bigger thing going on, you know? And then he got reprimanded by the local police department, like, taken in and had to sign a statement saying that he, you know, understood that he could not commit any more, like, illegal acts, like this kind of rumor mongering. You know, they asked him to, like, say, like, can you do it? Like, can you? And so he, like...
Well, they made him sign a statement saying he would no longer commit, quote, unlawful acts.
Yeah, like, they asked them, like, can you do this? Do you understand? And things like... And later, after he died, these would become hashtags that people... Mm. And protest slogans, almost, that people would use on the internet. Like, I saw a video that was a compilation of videos from Douban, which is TikTok, China's TikTok. Mm-hmm. And it's literally TikTok because it is the same company.
Yeah.
There were people, like, doing videos of themselves in, like, surgical masks, and they had written on the mask, like, I don't understand, like, I don't agree, I don't understand, like, mm-hmm. you know, I can't do it, I don't understand. Like, so that was kind of because of what the doctor was made to sign by the police.
I think it's hard to overestimate how upset Chinese people are about his death. Like, when the reports first came out that he had died, people were furious. People were commenting about it online. So much so that what they did was they took his dead body.
Speaking of things that sound like conspiracies,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Seriously. They put his dead body on life support and were like, hey, we're trying to save him. He's on life support. And then, obviously, this weekend at Bernie's nightmare scenario didn't work out, and then they had to admit that they were dead, and then just people freaked out.
Yeah, so literally, state-run media had already reported that he had died, so everybody was like, he's died. And then the online fury was intense, and then people started hearing from sources inside the hospital that, like, you know, hours after his heart had already stopped, they tried to hook him back up onto life support machines. So that they could
just
say,
diffuse the anger.
Yeah, and just say, like, get all the reporting retracted that he died, say that they were resuscitating him, he was in critical condition. And I even saw some, you know, reports, like, there were screenshots, literally, of people talking about this, where they were saying that, like, the hospital said to put him back on to, like, kick it up to a higher level, like, to stall and buy some time and, like, report it up to a higher level so somebody else could make the decision so the hospital wouldn't get in trouble. You know what I mean? So... yeah, I mean, that's a lot of the kind of CYA stuff that happens, too, in general with things like this, where it's like, this is a disaster, nobody wants to be left holding the bag, right?
I mean, the funny thing is that, like, the Communist Party had an opportunity to make Dr. Li Wenliang into a martyr for the Communist Party's cause, because he was a Communist Party member,
mm-hmm.
and... the Communist Party could have said, we're not covering things up. Dr. Li Wenliang is a hero for supporting China and the Chinese people on behalf of the Communist Party.
I mean, they are doing that.
Oh, but that's like, it's way too late to do that because they didn't. Like, if you're going to control the narrative, you have to do it first. Otherwise, the narrative is out of control.
Well, you know how they're trying to control the narrative now. In the face of everyone being so upset, they're now trying to, as they always do, blame hostile foreign forces. They're saying that, like, the death of Dr. Li Wenliang is being taken advantage of by hostile foreign forces to stir up anger, and
right.
We see this all the time.
So people aren't actually angry themselves.
They're being manipulated.
They're being manipulated. So, and then people started getting angry about the fact that they weren't allowed to be angry. You know, it always has to be, like, a hostile foreign force, like as a puppet master to the Chinese people. I mean, people were like, many people were talking about how, like, their WeChat was full of people talking about Dr. Li and being upset at his death. And, you know, I think also part of it is he was just an ordinary guy in a lot of ways. Like, he was young. He was 34 years old. He had a wife who was pregnant with their second child, a 5-year-old son. And he wasn't like, you know, when we talk a lot about these people who are brave enough to be dissidents to the under the Chinese regime, like, they're, you know, they're going against the grain, they're going against society. So a lot of people, it's easier to be like, oh, well, you know, that guy was just weird. Like, why does he have to talk about human rights? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
he was too much of an everyman.
Yeah. Like, if he was, like, if, you know, if Chen Guangchen just, you know, stopped antagonizing the local government, right?
Uh-huh.
If, like,
the blind human rights activist.
Yeah. Or if, you know, lawyers stopped trying to defend human rights victims, or, like, you know, if you don't make waves, that's the, like, there's this kind of thing in Chinese society where, like, ultimately it can be blamed on the person who's, you know, crossing the line. You know, if, you know, if the Muslims just weren't extremists,
exactly.
Like, you know, if they didn't want to actually worship their faith,
if
or
the,
like,
Falun Gong would just go away and be quiet.
And, yeah,
the
just
problem
practice
always,
secretly at home, you know, like that kind of thing. So, like, it's always easier to kind of, like, blame the renegade. I was going to say, you know, the person who's, like, stepping out of line.
Yeah.
But now that Li Wenliang was not a person who stepped out of line in any way, really, and his crime was literally just WeChatting to, like, that.
Other medical professionals.
Yeah, so, like, that.
About an upcoming outbreak.
Yeah, and because it's an outbreak that's affecting everybody in China, mm-hmm. that is, like, the rage, right? You know, it's
interesting because you never know, like, what the straw that's going to break the camel's back is going to be. And so I don't know if this is that straw even.
I think it's probably too early to say it's that straw.
Right. But I mean, like, you know, it kind of just was a confluence of forces. By the way, sorry about that clanging sound. It's a cold day in February, and that's the radiator that's clanging. We do not have someone
locked in your basement.
In the basement, yes.
I was feeling much more cozy until that idea popped into our heads.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Well, speaking of chained to the basement, have you seen what some of these hospitals look like? Like the new prefabricated hospitals.
Well, hold that thought for just 1 second, because I wanted to finish up with Dr. Li Wenliang. One of my favorite things that is happening in the response to his death is that people were using the hashtag, like, I want freedom of speech, and then that got censored. And so then they started doing hashtag, we demand freedom of speech.
I mean, I think that's just a, you know, proof that this was all orchestrated by hostile foreign forces like the United States, who are constantly talking about things like freedom of speech. Like, people care about that.
Yeah,
right?
Look at it, but look at how messy and chaotic our American society is with our freedom of speech.
I'm going to get really depressed if we keep talking about it like that.
But clearly, this virus and Dr. Li Wenliang is, if not the straw, it's another straw that's weighing down the camel of communism.
It's, the pile of straw is pretty high, but so far the camel seems to be all right.
It's really a strong camel.
They've been injecting the camel with steroids.
Okay. All right. Anyway.
You had something you were saying, Shelley, well, about someone locked in a basement?
Well, before we go back to that, like, about Li Wenliang, you know what the Chinese government's response has been is, first, they started publicizing how his family was going to get a certain amount of money for his service. And then they are sending a team from the Central Disciplinary Inspection Committee, like the people who have been carrying out Xi Jinping's quote-unquote anti-corruption campaign to Wuhan to investigate, his death and whatever. But, like, you know, this... so they're definitely trying to regain hold of the narrative, and, you know, somebody in Wuhan is going to get in trouble for this.
So someone will be chained to the basement.
Somebody will be blamed. Meanwhile, you have, Dr. Li's mom is, speaking to, Chinese media and, saying, what kind of answers, why did this happen, and that's being spread around. I don't think the anger is going to go away, even if the censorship of that anger is going to... I think they probably let it go on for a certain amount of time because there was just so much they couldn't adequately censor all of it, but also it provides a release valve.
A little bit of release.
Yeah. So the fact that people can talk about this is releasing some of that anger, but I don't think that people are going to forget about this, really. So, yeah.
Well, now I'm really curious what you were saying.
Oh, about that prefabricated hospital, the one with the 1,000 beds.
Oh, speaking of people locked in the basement.
Yeah, so people have, there's been video taken, and there are bars on the windows. The doors locked.
To keep the virus from getting out.
The doors locked from the outside. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that make it seem almost like, more of a detention center or prison than a hospital. And then people had started joking about, I wonder how China would have all these prefabricated materials that, that could be built into this hospital that looks weirdly like a detention center. Speaking of conspiracy theories.
Yes, does China happen to have a lot of secret black jails scattered across the country? I don't know.
Especially in, northwest China, Yeah. So that they could just build quickly out of...
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So, that was one thing that was going on, plus these new quarantine centers, which
seem like a disaster,
which are they're like gyms or like these bigger spaces where people who are not that sick can go. Like, these aren't people who need oxygen and ICU support. Like, it seems like maybe right now a quarter of people get really sick, to the point, again, with the data that we have, maybe a quarter of the people get sick enough that they will need to be hooked up to machinery, mm-hmm. right? So they need to be like in an ICU. But people who are kind of like mildly or more sick, but aren't to the point where they need to be hospitalized there, are being put in these quarantine centers yeah. where it doesn't look like there's a lot of, it looks like sick people are just being put together without a lot of like, you know, support there or medical
like
barriers care.
Between beds. You know what it looks like? It looks like those wards they had during the 1918 Spanish influenza, where it's just like you have big open rooms with beds, you know, a couple feet away from each other, and there's just these big open spaces. There's no like walls or even curtains or anything. It's just like beds, row after row after row of beds.
Which seems like a good way to spread the virus, eh?
Mm. Yes.
And that is actually one of the directives coming down from the central government, is that they need to round up more people who are sick.
Yeah, like a lot of people are like, hey, I don't want to go to these places because the hospitals are overcrowded. These quarantine centers are probably going to make me sick. But yeah, now like local officials have been ordered to go to people's homes, take their temperatures, and like force them into these places.
And you know, these are not going to be, I'm going to bet, because medical staff are so overstressed in the hospitals already, I'm guessing the people who are coming to like everybody's houses to like take their temperatures are not going to be trained and like able to diagnose
like
them.
Policemen.
So I'm going to guess that a lot of these people who are going to be forcibly, and we've seen literally videos of people being dragged out of their homes, uh-huh. kicking and screaming, and you know, people are afraid, and a lot of these people may not have the coronavirus. We don't know,
but they might get it in these quarantine centers.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's like this, the Chinese Communist Party machinery starts going, and it's only about like. It's a machinery of mass political movements.
Well, it's
right?
a well-oiled machine, oiled with the blood of the Chinese people.
Oh God!
I know, that was very vivid. But you know, they don't always drag people out of their homes. There's that one case of where local officials just built iron bars barricading a family from Wuhan into their home, so they couldn't get out. And
I've seen multiple photos of different people locked into their homes.
And
yeah.
like, there's no way for them to get food. They have to rely on neighbors, like, dropping stuff down into their windows.
I mean, I think that's the, like, it's weird, though, how last week that felt, like, incredibly inhumane. And now, this week, that feels, like, slightly better than being dragged off to a quarantine center where you could get sick Jeez. And die, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't know. Starving to death with your family locked in your home, or going with being forced with your entire family to go into an infectious
environment. I'd rather die at home with my family.
I think that's how a lot of people are feeling,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah. But this is why also the like the number of infections and deaths is like, there's just no way to count how bad they are or how big it is. And yeah, I mean, like it could be in the hundreds of thousands of infections. It could be in the millions. And it's just like, it's impossible to know just how bad it is or how bad it's going to be, because all these measures that the Communist Party is taking, like so many of them are either ineffective or actually counterproductive.
You're perversely incentivizing people to hide their sickness mm-hmm. now, basically.
But, you know, for people listening, there's actually a lot you can do to help support people in China trying to expose this kind of stuff. So there was like the example of the citizen journalist Fang Bin.
Yes.
So he was just this guy who was traveling around Wuhan using his like phone to, you know, document how crowded hospitals were. There were photos of like dead bodies everywhere. And then the police came to his house and arrested him. Well, actually, no. There was a group of men in hazmat suits saying they need to check him
yeah, they
for the
were,
virus.
Yeah, they were saying he was like it was a health thing.
Yeah, and so obviously as part of a necessary quarantine measure, they had to take away his like computer and laptop and phone.
Well, and they also dragged him to the police station.
As you know, the police have to check you out if you're sick, right?
And, you know, asked him why he had to take videos of the dead bodies and the body bags being moved from the hospital to the morgue. You know, why can't he like do some positive videos, make people feel better, yeah. You know?
Well, they actually accused him of, like, taking money from foreign forces, again, foreign forces, and they threatened to quarantine him for creating fear, which, you know, that's not a quarantine I think you come back from.
Well, I mean, the good news is that Fang Bing was released, and one thing that happened is pretty quickly after he was taken, other, like, citizen journalists and activists were able to get the news out that he had been taken. And so there started to be a buildup online of people, like, trying to, like, get information about him or whatever, and he directly attributes that to his release, basically.
Which is why I brought it up, because that's something listeners can do. Like, if you pay attention to what is coming out of China, you know, make these people public, make them well-known, and that makes it more difficult for the Chinese Communist Party to squash them, to secretly take them to their cellar.
Well, speaking of another citizen journalist, his name is Chen Qiushi. Chen Qiushi was kind of like already semi-famous. He was a lawyer, and he had gone down to Hong Kong during the protests, actually. So he was a lawyer, and he had gone to Hong Kong during the protests over the summer and filmed some videos there or whatever and talked about his experience being in Hong Kong. So he had kind of a following. And he is not from Wuhan, but he's from Qingdao, but he traveled to Wuhan after the beginning of the outbreak, knowing that he wasn't going to be able to get out anymore, mm-hmm. to try wow. to, you know, expose some stuff that was happening there. And he's been posting YouTube videos and, you know, WeChat videos, like, every day talking about his stuff. But then Thursday, he disappeared.
Mm.
And then his friends kind of took over his social media and said, you know, they're looking. His mom posted a video, like, asking people for help to locate him. I think the latest is that people think that he may have been forcibly quarantined by the local authorities.
Jeez.
And then the authorities in Qingdao, the police in Qingdao, visited his parents and basically tried to intimidate them, which is, you know, a good sign that he's been already taken in Wuhan. Yeah. So, like, people are now desperately trying to find the whereabouts of Chen Qiushi. Like, the rumor is that he's been taken into, like, one of those quarantine centers where he'll be held for, like, 8 to 14 days, you know. And jeez. If he wasn't sick, there's the, you know, possibility he could get sick from being there. So, yeah, it is still very risky for people trying to get information out of China.
Yeah, I mean, I think this also just shows that when, for example, Communist Party leader Xi Jinping says we're going to resolutely curb the outbreak, it's going to be on the Communist Party's terms. They don't actually want the people to, of their own accord, do what they feel is necessary to stop it. It has to still be a top-down solution. And this is what's happening with the top-down solutions. It kind of reminds me, there's actually this Washington Post op-ed by Chen Guangcheng. You mentioned him earlier. He's the blind human rights lawyer who now lives in the U.S.
Who we interviewed.
Mm. Yeah, and the op-ed is called "Warning: Chinese Authoritarianism is Hazardous to Your Health." I mean, that kind of gets to it right there. But I mean, he's talking basically about how when the outbreak happened, the Chinese Communist Party basically reverts to its sort of, you know, methodology, its well-oiled machine of, you know, locking people down, like hiding information, and it basically is, it's not a solution that is, you know, custom tailored to dealing with a disease outbreak the way that, for example, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, what, you know, has drills for, like, you know, what do we do if we have this kind of viral outbreak? Like,
I mean, they have those procedures, but that takes a backseat
to the politics.
To the politics.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to somebody online, and they're like, every country would do what China is doing if there was an outbreak.
That is not true.
I mean, but there is this kind of, especially I think in the first week after they locked down Wuhan, there was that. There, I had seen some, like, analysis that was like, well, like, they're being so efficient. They're building this hospital so quickly, and they've managed to lock down the city, you know.
They built these great hospitals with bars on the windows and locks on the outside of the doors.
That's before the hospital was built, so you can, you know, forgive people for that. But, you know, the whole idea that, like, oh, locking down a city is the most efficient and fast way to contain a virus versus, like, public health education campaigns and, you know, like all this, like people are very, like there's, I think also a lack of, you know, public health information education, but also it, like even things that we would take for granted in like the US, like, oh, you know, that most public restrooms would have soap.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, toilet paper, or, you know, something that you could wash your hands
not
with.
Not in a third tier city like Wuhan,
so,
that's for sure.
You know, there's just like, there's like basic problems with that kind of stuff. But then like on top of that is this type of like authoritarianism that decides to lock down a city and then round up people from that city and other areas, regardless of whether they're sick or not.
Right. I mean, one of the reasons that the Spanish flu in 1918 killed like so many millions of people, I think killed like what, 50 million
something like that
worldwide, I mean just incredible. And like, but in 1918, like, people didn't understand sanitation. No one had ever seen bacteria or viruses with a microscope. That technology didn't come till like the early 30s, I think. Penicillin wasn't invented yet. I mean, obviously, it's a virus, so, you know, they couldn't have used penicillin anyway, but, like...
Isn't most penicillin now made in China?
That's a separate issue, but my point with the Spanish flu is that, like they had very primitive sanitation and, like, you know, ways to combat it, and in a similar way, like, Wuhan and other sort of... It's not a backwater city so much, but it is third tier. Like, it's not like one of the advanced cities.
Yeah, people forget that China overall is a very poor country, that, like, right. 900 million people make less than $10 a day.
Right, and, like, my experience in mainland China is a lot of third tier cities, they just had, like, such backward sanitation and just public consciousness about health issues. So, although, interestingly, you know, the Spanish flu, I was talking to my mom the other night, and she was saying... You know what worked in the Spanish flu is homeopathy, which is like a sort of European medicine. So I looked this up because I thought my mom was just making this up. And it turns out that homeopathy was incredibly effective at treating the Spanish flu.
I still have no idea what this is.
Homeopathy, it's a type of medicine, the way that you have allopathic medicine, you have... Chinese
allopathic
medicine
is Western medicine, like, yeah. Like, okay. You know,
homeopathy is like it's not very popular in the US. It's popular in Europe, although it's become somewhat less so.
I mean, some people see it as kind of like pseudoscience, like the way people see, right, chiropractors or something, right, like that. Like, you know, like, yeah. Yeah.
Chiropractic is also considered like a different branch of medicine in a way. But apparently I looked this up and the mortality rate for Spanish flu was like 20%, but for people treated with homeopathy, it was close to 1% mortality.
Are those accurate stats, though? I mean,
how am I supposed to know?
Were these statistics on a homeopathy site?
Yes. Accuracy ninjas,
yes,
striking,
yes,
viciously.
No, I mean, it's a fair question to ask. I'm only saying that, like, there may be other
treatments. I'm not against alternative medicine, actually, at all, but... That just kind of actually reminds me of the film Contagion. Have you guys seen that?
I haven't seen that.
All right, well, I won't.
I don't like those movies.
Now is not the time to watch Contagion or Outbreak.
Apparently, Contagion was like one of the top 10 iTunes movies last week, suddenly, for some reason.
So dark.
Well, you know, according to my mom, a mother's kiss can cure anything.
Well, you know what is actually interesting now that we're talking about alternative medicine is that the Chinese state media has been pushing TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, as like ways to cure or treat the coronavirus.
Which is funny because a lot of people who do Chinese medicine say TCM actually stands for traditional communist medicine, because it was like a system. There's classical Chinese medicine, which is what they practiced traditionally. And then basically Mao and like his communist forces recompiled everything to create TCM, traditional, what they call traditional Chinese medicine.
Yeah, what is interesting is that, you know, people pretty much agree that state-sponsored traditional Chinese medicine, like what's pushed by the state, is kind of bunk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in China, state-sponsored X is going to be bunk.
Well, unless not state it's sponsored method-
execution.
Oh gosh, I wasn't gonna. Oh, no, I was gonna say. Why? I was gonna say not state sponsored methods of, you know, like I was gonna say like locking people up or whatever. But you went way.
It was
like,
it was way too far. But yeah. I mean, but it's an interesting point about Chinese medicine. But also, if you look at like ancient traditional Chinese medicine, they had also traditional methods of diagnosis. But nowadays, a lot of times they're using Western methods of diagnosis, but then trying to treat them with Chinese medicine, and it's not really a good match. Well, so it's often not as effective.
What were you getting at, Shelley?
Oh, just the idea that, like, a few years ago, the Chinese Communist Party decided that traditional Chinese TCM mm-hmm. version of Chinese medicine was going to be, like, something they were going to promote mm-hmm. as, like, a, you know, just as effective as Western medicine. Like, kind of the way that they were looking at Qigong, like, Chinese, like, this, mm-hmm. like, those, like...
That ended well.
You know, exercises back in the 80s where they were trying to figure out a way to, like, kind of make it a Chinese, like a Chinese state science. Thing. A Chinese science. So they've been pushing TCM lately. So it's part of... Regardless of how actually effective TCM medications are at treating coronavirus or not, like, there is a political incentive to push these, like, you know, TCM things. So you're seeing a lot of that too. So
with the coronavirus.
So is it effective? I don't know, but like the state has an incentive, like, to push that because it's part of their like political plans and their like propaganda that they're already doing. So yeah, that's just another way in which, like, the whole political thing comes above.
Actually, you know, helping people not die?
I mean, it's a virus, so it's very hard to see. Like, there's limited things you can do. Basically, like, a lot of the people who are in hospitals who are very sick, they're just getting supportive care. Like, you know, right. they're being hooked up to oxygen machines. If they can't get enough oxygen, they're...
Have they tried mother's kisses?
I don't think anybody wants to be kissing anybody who has the coronavirus, unless you want your mom to also get the coronavirus.
You know what industry is really suffering in China right now is dating apps. That was really bad.
Yeah, okay. Where do we take that from?
Hey, do you guys want to talk about the World Health Organization a little bit? Because this is something that I'm personally very frustrated.
Yeah, the World Health Organization has done a fantastic job doing whatever the Chinese Communist Party wants.
Yeah, so the World Health Organization is a UN-backed body. And so that means anything involved in the UN, China has tremendous power over. So, you know, we've been talking to you for almost an hour about everything that the Communist Party has been doing to deal with this virus that has been horrible. And yet the World Health Organization has only praised the Chinese Communist Party's response to handling the virus.
Right. I mean, the WHO is essentially in China's pocket for how to handle this. And I think that the reasoning, besides in general China's influence at the United Nations, it's also this. China has about 20% of the world's population, right? And so the World Health Organization wanting to have access to that very key important, you know, segment of the world's population decided that, okay, well, to have access, we're just going to have to play by the Chinese Communist Party's rules. But what that's resulted in is like all sorts of problems because they've agreed to play that game.
How about Taiwan?
What's Taiwan? It's just a province of China, Chris.
But that still means that the World Health Organization isn't going to share information with the Taiwanese government.
Right, because Taiwan does not have a government. We can never admit that.
The World Health Organization has had, like, what, two emergency meetings since the coronavirus?
Yeah, the first one they decided not to declare it a global health emergency, but the second one they did declare it a global health emergency.
And which country was not invited?
Well, I think the thing about the global health emergency is that their justification for not saying in the first place, it's the spread outside China has not been huge yet, mm-hmm. but now they're saying, you know, really it's where is the coronavirus most dangerous outside of China, places in Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. where it already is, like places like Thailand, mm-hmm. Places like if it gets to India or Africa.
I mean, if it gets to Africa, Africa has like almost no public health system in most countries. It's really...
I mean,
but they have Huawei.
I mean, it depends on the country, right? So it's just like for places like the U.S., it's less of a danger because there's a greater chance of it being contained early enough.
Mm-hmm.
But the one place that you definitely would not want to be if there was a coronavirus outbreak is a cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
There's 3 cruise ships, at least, that have been semi-quarantined because of the coronavirus outbreak. The worst one is outside of Japan, off the coast of Japan. There's a cruise ship with like 4,000 people on it. They have 64 confirmed cases of coronavirus.
Oh, jeez. But they're actually confining people to their cabins.
Yes. They're confining people to their cabins for like 2 weeks. And every time they find another coronavirus case, the coronavirus cases they're finding, they're taking them off the ship and bringing them to hospitals in Japan. But every time they find a new person, they reset the clock. So
So they're going to be there like until there is no cases for like a week.
Yes, at least.
Oh my gosh. Shell, have you ever been in like one of the inside cruise ship cabins that has no windows?
I think I would actually possibly go insane if I had to stay in there for 2 weeks.
I would go insane after 48 hours with no windows and no access to fresh air or sunlight.
I think I did see that they were starting to let the inside passengers go on deck like for a little bit per day.
Gee.
But like that was after several days already of being stuck.
I mean, it's basically like a prison.
I mean, cruise ships are like huge, basically floating petri dishes already. Yeah. Like people get sick on cruise ships all the time. So,
but just to conclude the WHO thing we were talking about, like Taiwan is very close to China, so it's in Southeast Asia. It's at risk of having the coronavirus spread. And the fact that the World Health Organization is basically ignoring it because of China is a serious problem.
That's what happened during SARS. However, Taiwan has been very stringent about trying to stop flights in from China and things like that. And so far, the spread inside Taiwan is not that bad. I think there's a couple of cases, but not that many. Mm-hmm. Japan has more, you know, like the place that should be worried is Hong Kong.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's already been a confirmed death there from the coronavirus. I believe it was a 39-year-old man. And Hong Kong was hit very severely by SARS back in 2003, which was also a result of the cover-up back then. So there's a lot of concern there that the coronavirus could be really bad.
There was a doctor who had treated SARS patients in Guangzhou in southern China. This is before people really understood what SARS was or what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
He flew to Hong Kong for a vacation with his family. And he, unfortunately, turned out to be a super spreader of the disease. So he infected over a dozen people in the hotel he was staying at before he died. And then those people actually took SARS around the world because they were in a hotel in Hong Kong and they traveled back to their home countries, and a lot of them ended up like spreading the disease. Like this particular doctor was one of the very early corona and ended up like 300 people died of SARS in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So
you can see why people in Hong Kong are nervous. And yet because of the situation in Hong, the political situation in Hong Kong, where people are so furious at the Chinese Communist Party and the Hong Kong government being completely in the pocket of the Chinese government, this has become yet another political issue. And so rather than taking steps to stop the spread of coronavirus, the Hong Kong government is basically resisting people's requests to better quarantine and guard the border with mainland China.
Yeah, I think the people in Hong Kong are pretty upset. There's also been runs on, you know, face masks and like hand sanitizers and toilet paper.
Yeah, there's actually been a warning that if it does spread in the U.S., even the U.S. is going to have a hard time meeting the demand of masks and stuff.
Well, I think there's already a shortage because so many people are buying up available masks and either hoarding them or sending them to China, where they're very need. I mean, they're very needed in China, but one of the problems is when you have to like manufacture so many of these masks, like there's that delay, and a lot of masks are manufactured in China too. And guess what's happening? A lot of those factories have not been working. Although I think I've read reports that they're trying to get them.
Oh, because they're in quarantine zone and like they were shut down along with everything else?
You know, even if they're not in quarantine zones, a lot of cities that are not under quarantine officially have been encouraging people to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of places like schools are closed until March. You know, places like they had to, because the Chinese New Year would have ended like this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have been encouraged to like stay home longer. Like
so basically longer, having everything made in China was not a good idea.
Yeah. Well, it turns out a large part of the medical global supply chain is based in China. So like where does the US get and Europe get a large amount of its medical supplies is actually from companies that are manufacturing inside China.
Including vaccines.
Vaccines, pharmaceutical drugs, especially generics, and, you know, basics like face masks and, you know, gloves and just kind of like a lot of the small, inexpensive, basic stuff.
Yeah, so that is one thing that people are just worried about, hospitals having enough equipment, you know, in places like the U.S., having enough supplies. I mean, like I was talking earlier about that Wuhan hospital where, like, literally they cannot eat or go to the bathroom for 12 hours, the doctors, jeez, because they cannot, you know, take off their hazmat suits. So that's going to be an issue. I think there is a national strategic stockpile of things like that. Most countries will have like a stockpile of things like necessary medical equipment.
I know, but how big is the stockpile going to be? Like, you have to consider how many masks. Like, just a city like Wuhan with 11 million people. Like, if everybody wore one new mask a day, which is the minimum, because you have to, you can't, like reuse a mask.
Once you take it off, it's basically done.
Right.
So as long as those 11 million people did not eat for that entire day.
Right. But even like conservatively, you have 11 million people for 1 month, you're talking about over 300 million masks would be required for just one city in China.
I mean, like people aren't getting a mask a day or whatever.
Well, no, they're not, and they can't. It's not possible. There's simply not enough masks on the planet to be able to be used this way. And so have to come up with other ways to handle this.
We should say that for people who are not in close contact with people who are sick, masks are not the most, like, effective way.
This is not an airborne virus.
So masks are not the most effective way.
Gloves are probably better.
Keep yourself from getting sick. The most effective way is to avoid being within like 3 to 6 feet of people who are sick and washing your hands all the time and not touching your face, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's not the masks that are most effective, but there is like a certain, like, people who are going to be close contact with people who are sick should have masks, you know, like doctors and nurses definitely need masks. They need eye protection. They need it's a bad situation. I think, you know, sometimes when we talk about these larger things, it's also hard to remember that there is the very real human toll as well. Like that, you know, there are, you know, people whose loved ones are dying and very quickly in some cases. I saw this like really heartbreaking thread from Douban, China's TikTok, where this woman was talking about how her dad died of the coronavirus, and then like, or no, her mom died of the coronavirus, and then like a week later her dad died of the coronavirus, and then she you know, the last thing she posted on Douban was about how her father like yelled at her from the hospital bed, told her to not come back because he was afraid of getting her sick, and then her dad died. And then, you know, so obviously she's, like, distraught. Both her parents have died within, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then she posted that she was really scared because she was sick.
Oh, she was. She got sick somehow.
Then she got sick.
And no way to know what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it after that. But, yeah, like, I mean, this is going to affect people in China for a long time.
Generation. Well, I mean, every generation has its gigantic catastrophe caused by the Chinese Communist Party.
It's, well, I think this is very unfortunate, but I do think for, like, a lot of young people who were not alive during the Tiananmen Square massacre, which was the last one that was, like, as the, you know, probably as most visible thing that didn't affect, like, only a certain group of people. Like, Falun Gong was, I mean, that was a lot of people because it was, like, anybody who did Falun Gong plus all of their family, right? But, you know, and, like, Xinjiang is, like, concentrated in a geographic area among a certain ethnic minority. So, like, something like this is, like, a disaster that really affects people who are living kind of oblivious lives in a lot of ways to...
The younger Chinese people, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap this up, do we have any lighter note to end on?
Yeah, I think that, well, one thing that this is doing is for those people who, you know, were kind of not involved in politics or were kind of oblivious to what was happening to Uyghurs or to Falun Gong practitioners or the Tiananmen Square massacre, like, this is an opportunity for them to see what Hong Kongers started to see in 2019, which is that the Chinese Communist Party is in many ways the poisonous root of all of these problems that are happening in society. And you can't just blame local officials. You can't just blame, you know, individuals who are so-called bad elements. Like, there's a problem with China's communist authoritarian system.
Yeah, the propaganda can't swing this any other way at this point.
That's a lighter note?
Well, it is a lighter note because, well, I mean, it's terrible to think about and it's hard to think about, but when people start to realize on a large scale that the Chinese Communist Party is a problem, like, that's the only way for there to be real political change in China. Like, no matter how much, you know, we foreign imperialist forces in our black hands try to undermine their system, like, even if that's what we were doing, it would not work. It really takes Chinese people themselves to make a positive change. And, you know, you need awareness to make that change. And one of the positive things that's going to emerge from this tragedy is that awareness. I'm trying to come up with something positive, Shelley. Don't look at me like that.
No, I get what you're saying.
I get what you're saying. But, like, it is just, I'm just feeling that it's so sad that, you know, this is what it has to, you know, this is what it would.
That this is what it takes.
I know,
yeah,
I know.
That, like, you know, who knows how many people will die. And, like, you know, this is not something that's going to, like, selectively target party officials or, you know, like, it's, you know, going to affect ordinary Chinese people, many of whom are just trying to get by, and it'll affect poorer people the most in a lot of ways. It won't be the, you know, corrupt,
Xi Jinping is going to be fine.
Yeah, like, it won't be the corrupt Communist Party officials who are, you know, going to be, like, struck by this disease, you know. It's just, it's one of the, yeah, it's a tragedy.
All right, Matt, you did kind of a good job taking us there, and then Shelley, you know, brought us back down to a horribleness.
Thanks, Shelley.
I mean, I think a lot of people are trying to think of how to help people in Wuhan and China, and we're looking into that. The people have asked us about this, and the issue here is that people definitely want to donate both supplies, which is what they need most, and money. The problem is that because of, like, the corruption, it's hard to know where to donate. Yeah. So that you
do not donate to the China Red Cross. It's not the same as the regular Red Cross, and the China Red Cross is corrupt.
The Wuhan Red Cross has also been, people inside China will not donate to them anymore because there have been videos of like supplies just like sitting in warehouses, and then like,
and this is another way that Communist Party corruption just screws over Chinese people.
And I think there was like some video that went viral that had like a person come in and take the best masks for like party cadres. So like that, people got really upset about that, you know, because this is supplies that are supposed to be going to the hospitals and stuff like that. So, you know, we're looking into it. We don't have a good answer for you right now, but yeah, I mean, we're not trying to, you know, make light of the situation. Yeah. We know people want to help.
But I mean, just spreading awareness of what's happening, I think, is one thing that anyone can do. And just, you know, let your friends and family know about what's going on there. You know, including obviously sharing China Unscripted, but also just other information. That's good.
You know, maybe exposing the whole propaganda narrative of how efficiently and great they are responding to this crisis.
Yeah. Yes, because if you've listened to this, you know that that is not the real story. And with that, I think we're going to wrap it up, because that's probably as hopeful and uplifting as we're going to get on this episode. So again, this episode of China Unscripted is sponsored by Surfshark. So when you go online, everything you do is being tracked and logged by the websites you visit and your internet service provider, and in many cases, by your government. And if you're in a country with, say, tens of thousands of internet police, China, you should definitely be using Surfshark to protect your identity online. It allows you to go around the government's firewall to access the free and open internet. VPNs like Surfshark are how people in China are able to post stuff to Twitter and Facebook and YouTube.
And also how a lot of our listeners are able to listen to this podcast and watch our YouTube shows from China.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, those people who are posting some of this stuff inside China that we're seeing in the West, a lot of them have been using VPNs.
A lot of people have been posting things to YouTube and Twitter.
So yeah. Illegal.
VPNs.
Like Surfshark. You know, Surfshark also has a clean web mode, and that protects you from ads, trackers, and malware. With Surfshark, you can connect as many devices as you want, and you can try it out with a 30-day money-back guarantee if you use a special URL for our China Unscripted listeners. Go to surfshark.deals/unscripted. So for a limited time with that URL, you can get 83% off a 2-year plan and an additional month free. This offer makes your subscription just $1.91 per month. And again, that covers as many devices as you want. So check out Surfshark, help support China Unscripted, and it's a great VPN. Also, have some tea from Path of Cha. Go to go.pathofcha.com/unscripted. You know, this way you can help support us keep making content like this. Because, you know, China really affects us all, no matter where we are. So, once again, thank you for listening to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganesda.
Talk to you next time.